The Rugby Union World Cup. Expert opinion, live in-play betting calls and weekly podcasts exclusive to William Hill.
Yeah, welcome along to the Rugby World Cup podcast. My name's Lee Phelps. Delighted to say that former England prop, a man who got 37 caps for his country, including playing at the 1991 World Cup, Jeff Probyn's on the line to have a chat about the next set of fixtures at the Rugby World Cup for the home nations in Ireland. Are you well, Jeff?
No, I'm very well. I'm not a happy bunny, let's be honest. Last week was a bit disappointing. I thought England did enough to win the game, but it's not always enough to do enough. You have to make sure that you win, and England fouled. It was always going to be a close game, and Wales just come out on top.
Yeah, indeed. We'll get into England in a couple of minutes' time when we look at their next match, that all-important game against Australia. We'll start with Wales versus Fiji. This one's on Thursday, late afternoon. Wales currently are 1-6 on the 80-minute betting, 5-1 Fiji, 28-1 the draw. The handicap, which we're more concerned with, really, aren't we? Unless you're a big player. -14 Wales giving away at the start of this match. Plenty of headline offers here. Wales to win and both Cuthbert and North to score a try is 4-1. Wales to win by 30 points or more is 6-1. Wales to win without conceding a try is 4-1. And then you've got plenty of Fiji headline offers as well. I guess, you know, looking at this match, Wales win this, then they're pretty much there. Fiji pretty much playing for third place, and then they'll qualify for the Rugby World Cup in 2019. Lots been mentioned about the injuries, Jeff, and how they've affected the team. I mean, they were already missing two players, of course, before we started, and then more have been added. Liam Williams, of course, not available because of the concussion as well. So Reece Webb, Scott Williams, Corey Allen, Hallam Amos, Lee Halfpenny, Jonathan Davis. It's a hell of a list of players missing. It seemed to galvanise them against England, but having had only a five-day turnaround against this tough Fiji side, who, let's not forget, beat them in 2007, obviously were nilled by them in 2011 at the World Cup, but this Fiji team are no mugs, and they'll know what to do. They'll know if they go in hard against Wales, they may find some fatigue in there.
Well, they might do, but the reality is, when you look at this Welsh side, it's still got some pretty good players. I mean, George North, obviously, Jamie Roberts, Alex Cuthbert. These are guys that have won Grand Slams. They're starting with Dan Pigger as the fly half, the guy who masterminded, if you like, the defeat of England. So, in that sense, and Gareth Davis, the scrum half. They haven't got a weak side. Against the Fijian side that have lost their star winger, Nanolo, or whatever his name is, the big guy, who's been banned for this one. They've not played as well as they hoped to. So in that sense, you know, for me, I would say that the standout bet would be the one, the 4-1 with Fiji not scoring a try. I do think that that they will score a try. So, you know, that's a bet to have. Mm. But it's going to be... Wales will be aware of the dangers of coming off the high. Warren Gatland would have been drumming it into his players this week. Don't forget, we may have beaten England, but we still need to win this game to guarantee that we'll be in that top two. Remember, at this moment in time, England could beat Australia. They could end up, it could all come down to a point difference still for Wales. If they fail to win this game, if they win this game, they will be guaranteed either a first or a second place. If they fail to win this game, there is a risk that they could actually go out in points difference.
And that is the thing. I mean, there's no way they'll go into this half-cock after what they did. And the other great thing for them, of course, Jeff, is that the crowd won't allow them to. This is going to be like a hero's homecoming at Millennium Stadium, isn't it, after what they did last week? I mean, to the Welsh fans, last week was everything, wasn't it? I know a few Welsh fans, and they'd rather win the World Cup than beat England, but only just.
Only just. It has to be. It's a very close call, that is. I mean, you know, there are 70,000 Welshmen in London, and I think every single one of them has phoned me or told me or texted me telling me about the result as if I didn't know. You know, it's beating England is everything, but they know that they... The last World Cup, they had the unfortunate thing with Sam Warburton getting sent off, getting the ban. And they feel that they have got a side that is capable. The win over England has pushed them in the right direction. They do need to move forward. They need to get this result. And I think playing at the Millennium Park in front of the home crowd, they will do. And I think they will score 30 points.
Yeah, so you're looking at, there are alternative handicaps. There's that headline offer that Jeff's referring to, Wales to win by 30 or more points, it's 6-1. And you can also look at the alternative handicaps. I mean, the interesting thing about that, Jeff, is that Wales minus 29 on the actual alternate handicaps is 9-2. So you're getting a full point and a half better by just going for that 30 points or more, which is the same bet. You know, they have to win by, 30 for the minus 29. So it's a lovely little offer that, a point and a half more for that to win by 30 points is worth going for. If you're not quite as brave, Wales minus 19, so winning by 20 or more is 8-5. So there's a few prices out there, but you think they'll have the points in the mind and they'll want to score as many as possible just to put it beyond all doubt.
I think they will. I think also, as I say, the last thing that Warren Gatland wants is this to be a close match, because if it does come down, if England can beat Australia and it comes down to a close match, it will be points difference and points, win prizes, as they used to say. If Wales can put some points on Fiji, score a few more than England did, then that will guarantee them their place. So it's all about scoring points for Wales.
When we look at the try scorers here, we've got a big list in front of us. George North, of course, tops the pile in terms of the favouritism in the market. He's odds on 5-6 to score a try here. Cuthbert's 11-10. Davis is 11-10. And so we go down the list. Is there anyone who absolutely stands out to you in terms of getting a try? If you think they're going to be points, then we should be able to pick one or two out here, shouldn't we?
Well, we should. The problem is that they've gone for all the big favourites like Cuthbert, North and Davis. They've not looked at the forwards, which is always something. Sam Warburton or Tipperick. I'd say Tipperick. He's going to come on at some point. One of the aspects about this squad, he's starting with a very, very strong lineup, but he will bring the likes of Justin Tipperick on fairly early. He'll give his players a bit of rest. He wants them to in a way run the England game out of their system, and then he'll bring on his replacements to play in it. So where you look for your try scorers, I'd say Justin Tipperick is a possibility. Let's say James Hook. How about James Hook? Resurrection from the grave, so to speak. Never thought he'd be in this World Cup. Has been called up. He's on the bench for this game. But he could get on and score a try.
Let's have a look at England's next match then. This is the big one against Australia. It's always a big one against Australia, whether it's a Test match, a World Cup or whatever else it is. Saturday night at 8 o'clock, these two teams go head-to-head. Fascinating game as well. We'll talk about last week a little bit here, Jeff. I mean, obviously there's been many column inches written and lots of airtime taken up already about whether he should or shouldn't and blah, blah, blah. I'm fascinated to get your view as someone who's played this sport at the very highest level. For me, it's not about making the decision, the big call. I can play golf or tennis and make a big call. It's actually carrying out the big call that's the crucial thing, isn't it? I've never got a problem with anyone making a big call. But you have to go and do it. It wasn't the call. It was what they did afterwards, wasn't it? It wasn't implemented the right way. Does that affect them psychologically going into this, Jeff? Is there something in Rob Shaw's mind now and the team's mind collectively where they play safer?
No, I tell you this much. If Rob Shaw gets that call again, he will kick the points. There is no doubt about that. It was a brave call. He felt that England had the strength up front, but they didn't manage the line out well. They hadn't managed the line out well all day. In fact, there was a number of elements in the way that England played late in that second half that was a bit like a football game where a team scores two goals and then sits back in defence and waits for the opposition to play. England did a bit of that. We got a bit of aerial ping pong when George Ford came on for Sam Burgess. Every time the Welsh kicked the ball long, England would kick it back to them. England should have been kicking the ball dead there and playing off the line-outs. And, simple little mistakes like that make decisions right or wrong. Anything can be decided. Anyone can say, right, let's go and do this, but you've got to do it. And the fact that England were incapable of setting their line up properly before the Welsh push them and bundle them into touch, or even the ability to get the ball out to the backs, having realised that they were going towards touch, was a mistake. And that mistake wasn't anything to do with Robshaw's decision to kick with a corner. It was a poor technical effort by the team. And they will have worked very, very hard on that this week. They know that if they're going to beat the Australians, it's going to be a forward battle that's going to do it, not so much the backs. If England can dominate the forwards against Australia, as they have done in the last two games they've played against them, they can win this game. The big thing is they've got to do it. It's no good, you know, saying we might. They've got to do it in this game. They have to put in a performance.
And it's only, you know, not even a year ago that England, of course, won 26-17 at Twickenham. And, you know, that whatever the Australian team say, that they'll have that in their mind. You know, that they're making 14 changes to the last match, but this is pretty much the same 15 that beat Fiji. Have got a couple of injury problems themselves, where, you know, players who were injured against Uruguay are out of the tournament. So that they're not at full strength here, are they, Australia? The betting shows us that England are slight favourites here. 4-5 in the main 80-minute betting. 5-4 Australia. The draw 18-1. So England giving away 2 at the start here, which really, Jeff, is pretty much negligible, I suppose, unless you think it's going to be a really, really tight match.
I think it will be a really, really tight match. I think, in all honesty, Australia have played some of the best rugby that we've seen in that group. They've got an amazing back line, really, a very, very experienced back line. Their star player is their fullback, like our star player is ours. We've got Mike Brown, they've got Israel Folau, who's a triple sports international. You know, he's played rugby league, he's played, I forget what else he's played, as well as union, but he's played for his country in 3 different sports. He's an amazing athlete. They've also got the experience of Will Genier at scrum half. The big problem for England, or the big question for England, is about the breakdown. The fact that the Australians have chosen Pocock and Hooper, they've got these 2 open sides, they're looking at the breakdown to be a clean thing. England didn't do that well in the breakdowns against Wales. That's going to be a very key area. You know, this game is going to go right to the wire. We've got no doubt that England will pull all the stops out, but the reality is that they're playing under enormous pressure. They know if they lose this game, they're out of the World Cup. It's as simple as that. There is no way back if they lose this game. To be honest with you, my heart tells me England, but my head tells me that Australia will probably win this, or it'll be a draw.
Yeah, 18-1 for the draw there. I mean, I guess the market I was looking at, Jeff, and you're tending to agree with me here, I guess, which is good for me, is Australia winning by between 1 and 12 points in that winning margins market, 7-4, so just under 2-1 for Australia to win by 1 to 12.
Yeah, and you've got to look at it like that. Simply, I mean, the Australians have the ability to pull out a result. They're the only team to beat New Zealand in recent times, you know, and that game was refereed by Wayne Barnes, an English referee. You know, we say about the Australian scrum, it's something that Chetra has worked on very hard since he's become the coach there. He's got their scrum more or less up to speed. So we will need a Herculean effort by our forwards to be able to dominate the Australian scrum. If they can dominate the Australian scrum, Jonathan Jones is coming back into the back line. We've got a bit more flair out there. Johnny May, Anthony Watson, Mike Bland, Brown. We've got the flair to be able to compete with them, but we need the forwards to win not only the scrums, but also the breakdown areas. That's a huge task, given that we have Chris Robshaw as our only real fast forward, and he's not the quickest of forwards. Ben Morgan and Tom Woods play a different sort of game to the Australian back row. So how we deal with these breakdowns is going to be crucial to whether or not we get the result. As I say, my heart says England can do it, and if they play the right game, they can do it. But at the moment, my head's telling me that Australia had the advantage.
If we think it's going to be a tight game, we don't. I get from what you're saying it might not be the highest scoring either. Picking a try scorer might be tricky, to be fair. Is there anyone who absolutely stands out to you as someone you'd be looking at?
For the Australians, I think that the try scorers, you've got to look at Pocock and Hooper because of their ability of the breakdown. Being there quickly, there's always a chance to shoot around the side. Genia, obviously, is up there. Folau as well, the outstanding player. For the English, I think Mike Brown and Johnny May are the two that I'd look at. To be honest, Ben Youngs might have a shot round the break of a breakdown, but it would depend how well we can clean that area out. So, you know, if I was picking an England player off the top of my head without thoughts of anything else, let's go Johnny May. He seems to be doing quite well on that front, sneaking in for the odd try.
Next up, let's have a look at Scotland's next game. They are playing South Africa. This one's at 4:45 on the 3rd of October, Saturday afternoon, of course. South Africa 1-8, Scotland 5-1, draw 25-1 on the handicap. That means Scotland with a 14-point head start when the game all begins. Scotland, of course, top the group with 10 points from South Africa, who are on 7. South Africa got 3 bonus points to Scotland's 2 there. Scotland having won both their games. South Africa, of course, famously having lost their first one. But look to have got the kind of the bit back between the teeth with that 46-6 win over Samoa. Again, you know, no surprise here, Jeff, but, you know, injury problems mean that different parts of the squad are coming in. Duncan Weir starts at fly half for Scotland. Finn Russell's been confirmed as being out injured. This is a big ask for Scotland, isn't it? With a 14 start, can they stay anywhere now? I was quite impressed with them when I watched them last weekend, the Scottish.
Yeah, I think the Scottish play a good game, and, you know, it's up in Newcastle. There's going to be a huge amount of Scottish support there. Sadly, I don't think it's going to help that much. You look at the quality in the South Africa side, they've virtually got their first team out. They don't seem to have suffered the injuries. And as such, you know, with Willie LaRue back there at fullback, Peterson, Brian Abana, Pollard playing, you know, they've found their form. That Japanese victory, unfortunately, may be Scotland's downfall. I can see Scotland losing this by more than 20 points.
There's plenty of offers there as well. You can probably take the extra handicap then in that terms. There's a different handicaps you can take on the match. South Africa minus 19, which would give you that 20-point victory, is priced up at 8-5. Do you think that is that you're saying that South Africa will score lots or Scotland won't score much?
Well, I think it'll be a combination of both. I think that South Africa will score the points and get that 18 to 20 points, as you're saying. But I think Scotland, you know, Stuart Hogg is probably their only world-class player there. Now, having Duncan Weir coming in for Finn Russell is not a weakness there. Duncan Weir, I think, is actually a better fly half than Russell. So that all works well. The big problem for the Scots is they've lost a couple of their players up front. You know, they've brought in Cowan, and he's an ex-Zulu, so he understands the South African mentality, should we say. But it's going to be the physicality of the South Africans that makes the difference. You look at their front row, you know Bismarck Duplessis, Yanni Duplessis, the Beast, and Eben Estabas, who's, I think, 22 stone, 23 stone, second row. You know, although the Scots have Richie Gray, you know, South Africa have got Richie Gray with knobs on, should we say. So in that sense, it's you kind of look at the South African side and think, I said at the start of this when I was talking to Sam, that I thought the South Africans were a good bet for the World Cup. They've been under the radar a bit. They've not played some of their best rugby, but they seem to be focusing now. And I think this South African team will see this as a challenge. They want to finish top of their group. This is the team they've got to beat, and I think they'll put the points on.
The try-scorer betting shows Brian Habana as the favourite for the South Africans to score. Scored in that win that I was talking about for them over Samoa. JP Peterson got a hat-trick in that match as well, and he's priced up at 11-8 here. As for the Scottish, then you got Tim Visser at 11-4. Tommy Seymour's the same price. Lamont 100-30. Much bigger prices for the Scots, obviously, because it's much harder to pick. You know, if they only score a try or two, maybe even at the most, then it's hard to pick. But would you be looking at the South Africans for try-scorer markets here?
Well, look at South Africans, but also look at Stuart Hogg for Scotland as a potential try scorer. Stuart is, as I say, I think he's a world class player. He's got ability. He attacks well from depth. If he's given the chance to run, which he will have at some point during the game, you know, he's a guy who could sneak in for a try. For the South Africans, you've got to look at Creel as well, the centre for him, Jesse Creel. He's got to be a potential try scorer. Physical player, carries the ball well. You've got Duplessis as well, Laurie Duplessis, the scrum half. He's a possibility. Because I'm trying to avoid picking the guys who are the obvious ones, like Peterson and Urbana, because you won't get the odds on those, but you will get the odds on some of these other players.
Final game we'll look at is the Ireland-Italy match. This is on Sunday at 4:45, 16-1 on the Irish, who are going along quite quietly. Draw 28-1, Italy 15-2. That means Italy start with 20 points advantage at the beginning of the game on the handicaps. So Ireland minus 20 at 10-11. These two teams, of course, played each other in the Six Nations, which Ireland topped. Ireland beat them 26-3 in Italy, Jeff. They won't have many fears about playing Italy here, will they? And you know what I said at the top there is that they're just kind of going along without anyone. Well, you know, over in England anyway, I'm sure in Ireland they're talking about them all the time. But you know, they're on the blind side almost. That game against France is kind of looming on the horizon. They top the group by a point from France. Played 2-1-2, so are France. So you know, the only thing that difference is, that, is that one bonus point. It's all building towards that. No mistakes. Let's wait till we get to the France game, I suppose, is the thought here.
Well, they've been lucky in a way. When you look at their draw, you know, you look at England's draw. England started the tournament with Fiji. Next game up, Wales. You know, and then Australia. England get the easy game at the end of their pool when it may be all too late. With Ireland, they've been reasonably lucky with the draw. They haven't really played anyone, you know, of any merit. So, in that sense, they've come through virtually unscathed. You can, you know, they've got a few problems with you. Niggles, whether Rob Tierney will be fit, whether he won't be fit, you know, whether they're going to be looking at Gerard Payne as a centre, whether he's going to start, whether he's not going to start. It's one of the reasons they've delayed their start. But you know, this Irish team is a good side. We know that they can play well. With Sexton playing at fly half, we know the sort of game they're going to play. The game they played in the Six Nations that did them so well. But a game that didn't work when they played against England, for the Italians, in the warm-up games, for the Italians, Sergio Parisi is new, is coming back in this. You know, he is such an influential figure for the Italians that you've got to say that they play probably 10 or 15% better just by having him on the field as a team. So if Parisi is picked in that Italian side, it will make the Irish job a little bit harder. I still expect the Irish to win. Can't say I don't. I think they're a good side. They will get through to the knockout stages. It's just whether or not they win the group or come second.
Indeed, yeah, and we'll find out about that, won't we? The 50-7 and the 44-10 wins, of course, have featured plenty of tries. I suppose you're looking at, you know, Kearney scored in both, didn't he? Bowe and Earls both got two in the Romania match in terms of try scorers. You know, you'd be looking for them to maybe get at least three tries on the board, maybe more than that, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, Dave Tierney's always going to be around. If Payne plays him or possibly Keith Earls coming, if Keith Earls moves into the centre instead of Payne, you know, we've got the opportunity there. It reduces his try-scoring ability. Obviously, Earls is better on the wing for him. But the Italians, McLean starts for them. He's a good runner with the ball in his hands. I always think that Gorey is one of the most underrated scrum halves. He's probably a world-class player in that Italian side. The Italians have a couple of try scorers. I'd go for McLean or Sarto as possible try scorers for the Italians, and obviously Dave Kearney for the Irish.
Jeff, before I let you go, and thanks for previewing those four matches, has anything that you've seen so far made you change your mind about the outright selections? I mean, the betting shows New Zealand as the even money favourites, 6-1 Australia, 7-1 England, 8-1 Ireland, 8-1 South Africa, 14-1 France, 16-1 Wales, and then 40-1 and bigger. The one thing that stands out on there is that given the precarious position that England are in, you wouldn't want them to be shorter than Ireland or South Africa in the betting, really, would you?
No, you wouldn't. No. And I'm amazed. I mean, you know, because it's at home and they're playing the games at Twickenham, that's why the bookies have given them the odds. I still stick with my with the thing of South Africa. I think that they're getting stronger as the tournament goes along. Ireland have not really played any opposition yet. This, you know, as I say, Ireland have got a good build-up. Their first real game will be next week when they play against France. We'll see how good Ireland are then. This French team is a big, powerful side. Not much flair being shown, but a lot of power, and that will challenge the Irish. So until then, we won't really know how either Ireland or France are playing. But England need desperately to win this game, not only for for the fact of moving into the knockout stages, but for also for the legacy that they're hoping this World Cup will bring for the English game.
South Africa then 8-1 to win it, 3-1 just to take a place in the final, which is a nice little bet. Thank you very much, Jeff. Thanks for your time, and we'll speak to you next week.
I look forward to it.